Sometimes I feel so uninspired. Sometimes I feel like giving up.
Good morning, Prime Minister.
Sometimes I feel so very tired. Sometimes I feel like I've had enough.
The agenda for this morning's cabinet, if I may. First Kosovo, then Northern Ireland, then the crisis in public transport, then the crisis in the health service.
Sometimes I feel so uninspired. Sometimes I feel like giving up.
Then the crisis in the prisons, then the dispute with the teachers, then you're having lunch with Richard Branson.
Sometimes I feel so very tired. Sometimes I feel I've had enough.
Cheer up, Prime Minister, it'll soon be Christmas.
Sometimes I feel like my room's been wired. Oh, bugger.
In the End, by Mark Taverner, starring Michael Williams, Barry Foster, and Jonathan Coy.
My friends, it's good to see so many of you here today to remember Langley Tarrant, although, of course, to his many readers, he will never be forgotten. He was not, in the conventional sense, perhaps a good man.
He was a git.
He was a brilliant journalist, Frank.
But when I think of Langley Tarrant, it reminds me of an occasion when, as a young curate, I bought some fish fingers and placed them in the fridge.
Oh, go quiet, Frank.
Then, foolishly, I forgot all about them for 6 weeks. When at last I opened the fridge, I closed it again rather quickly. Oh dear, I thought, no fish fingers for me. I mentioned this to my next door neighbour.
How much more is there?
Show some respect, Frank.
Father, he said, what you need is bicarbonate of soda. I'll bring some round after lunch. My neighbour, a good Christian man, duly appeared, opened my fridge and closed it again rather quickly. Father, he said, that fridge is beyond bicarbonate of soda. And those are the saddest words I've ever heard. But you know, to God, you're never beyond bicarbonate of soda, even if you are a stinking tabloid journalist.
The headlines again. The government has condemned what it called the British media's obsession with sex and scandal. The latest junior minister to be photographed on Clapham Common has claimed he was applying traditional values in a modern setting. The leader of the Liberal Democrats has denied being in bed with the Labour Party. The Conservatives have rejected claims that they're financed by foreign drug dealers. A spokesman said all the party's backers were British. And Denise Van Alschen has been appointed editor of The Guardian. BBC Radio 4 News.
Thanks, everybody. You know, every single one of those stories came from the papers. What about BBC News being proactive for a change? Maria, where's George Crabbe? I mean, you can say what you like about George.
Yes, you usually do.
But at least our crime reporting is ahead of the game. George initiates stories.
Well, not today he doesn't. He's gone to a funeral.
Not his grandmother again. That bloke's grandmother's made more comebacks than Boris Becker.
No, not this time. Langley Tarrant. Tarrant Tells the Truth, pages 4, 5 and 6.
The muckraker extraordinaire.
Do you know, his grotty tabloid exclusives have caused more resignations, divorces and suicides than anybody else in British journalism?
Yeah. I didn't know he was a mate of George's.
I don't know that you could actually call him a mate, Frank. Oh, that's better. You'd think they'd allow smoking at a cremation, wouldn't you? No, Langley didn't really have mates.
I'm not surprised.
He was very good at what he did, Frank.
Sticking his nose into people's bedrooms.
Well, yes, to some extent. Hello, Angus.
Oh, George, you old lush.
Still wearing a bow tie and presenting to work for the Daily Telegraph.
Yeah, occasionally.
Superintendent Jefferson of the Yard.
Oh, the man who keeps George Craig in crime stories. Delighted. You look puzzled, Superintendent.
Oh, don't worry about that. Frank's looked puzzled for 30 years. The bewildered superintendent, they call him.
I'll tell you why I'm looking puzzled. Because a muckraking tabloid git is meant to have topped himself in a fit of conscience.
And journalists aren't supposed to have consciences.
So why did you invite me here, George? Because you don't believe it either, do you?
The PM has had a hell of a year, of course.
Yes, but even so, what is the matter with the man?
I suppose even prime ministers get depressed.
But we're miles ahead in the polls. You're doing a wonderful job with the economy.
Thank you.
I'm tootling along at the Home Office. Let's face it, the next election's a formality.
Perhaps that's the trouble. Perhaps he just hasn't got enough to do.
He is looking very tired, mind you. Thought he was going to pass out this morning in cabinet.
He worries too much about the flaming newspapers. That's the trouble.
Well, it's easy to say when you're getting the best press of any Labour Chancellor in history.
Nah, but I wouldn't be losing sleep about it if I were public enemy number one. I don't have to be told how wonderful I am every day of the week, unlike some people.
You know what's really up with the PM, don't you? He's missing his chief spin doctor. Satan of Notting Hill Gate. No. The Wicked Witch.
Don't even think about it. David, the whole atmosphere of this government has changed out of all recognition since that woman resigned. No backbiting, no conspiring against colleagues, no unfortunate leaks designed to make the PM look wonderful and the rest of us look like idiots. The Wicked Witch comes back into this government over my dead body.
Yes, that is rather the way she'd like to come back, of course.
Max, naturally, will cover the censure debate.
With an introduction from yours truly.
Well, won't... And now the censure debate, cover it.
We've got to set the scene, dear boy. Bring it to life.
Otherwise, what's the point of a special political correspondent?
Yes. Yes, quite. Mm. All right, Max, read it over.
Oh, the cares of office and the burdens of state.
Cut that bit, Max.
Cut it? Oh, very well. Ah, the loneliness of the long-distance Prime Minister.
Cut that bit, Max.
Is this, we ask ourselves, just a routine censure debate by the opposition?
Yes, it is.
I'm in full spate, dear boy.
Is this just a routine censure debate? Or will the opposition leader a tale unfold whose lightest word would harrow up thy soul?
Max.
Freeze thy young blood. Make thy two eyes...
Max, I think we'll cut this bit.
But I haven't got to the part about the fretful porpentine. That's the best bit.
I think perhaps, and now the leader of the Conservative Party. That'll about cover it. The Wanderer returns. How was the funeral, George?
All right, Max.
Spiked again, George.
It was very moving. In fact, even the vicar was moved to say that Langley was a total bastard.
Well, that about sums him up. Am I right in thinking you're interviewing the Home Secretary this afternoon?
Oh, what? Oh, yeah, eventually. One or two other things to do first. If anybody wants me, I'm at Langley Tarrant's flat.
George, don't keep the Home Secretary waiting, will you? George?
And now, the leader of the Conservative Party.
Madam Speaker, just 2.5 years ago... we were promised an end to scandal, a new beginning. And what have we got? New Labour, new sleeves.
Yes.
You see, the problem is this Prime Minister has a fundamental contempt for this House of Commons.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I'm not surprised. He hasn't got time to come to this House. He has to keep going to Clapham Common for meetings of the Parliamentary Labour Party. And when they're not on Clapham Common, they're flitting round the world in Concord, staying in the best hotels, all at the expense of the taxpayer, whose taxes are going up and up and up. Typical Labour maladministration. Typical Labour government.
Madam Speaker, the Right Honourable Gentleman was recently described as an excellent stand-up comedian. I agree with that judgment. I must say that coming from him, accusations of sleaze are pretty rich, as of course are some of his financial backers, wherever they get their money from. I'm not blaming him. It must be very difficult. People aren't giving money to the Conservative Party. They can't see the Conservative Party unless they can afford the microscope. it must be like being asked, can you spare some change, please, by an amoeba? He accuses me of contempt for this House. Only for some parts of it, Madam Speaker. he understand that measured by every indicator, it is the popularity of this new Labour government that is going up and up?
Sometimes I feel like my head is spinning. Hunger and pain are all I see.
Prime Minister, you've just scored a major parliamentary triumph.
Yes. You know something, Russell? Nowadays, when I'm in front of an audience, it's the only time I feel properly alive. And then I get back here to Downing Street and I think, what the hell's it all for?
Well, obviously, I'm very sorry.
Yes, of course, yes. Of course you are. Do you ever think about that night in Islington, you know, when you agreed that I would stand for the leadership and you wouldn't?
Oh, it occasionally crosses my mind.
You ever think perhaps you got the better of the deal?
Well, I don't have a lot of time for that sort of introspection when I'm trying to run the Treasury.
No. That's exactly what I meant.
Yeah, stuffy in here.
Well, nobody's been here for weeks. Mm. George, you've got any idea what we're meant to be looking for?
Well, it all depends, doesn't it, Fred? Yeah, let's have some of Langley's scotch, shall we?
Oh, yeah.
He won't be needing it. On the night of November the 10th, Langley Tarrant leaves his newsroom at Canary Wharf. He's joking with colleagues. Tomorrow's front page is going to destroy two people's careers. He gets a taxi, stops off and buys some booze. The driver drops him outside his front door.
Yeah, it was the taxi driver that started me wondering. According to him, Tarrant was in such a good mood, he tipped him a tenner.
Then he comes in here, writes a letter in longhand saying, I'm sorry for all the hurt I've caused, and drinks the whiskey with some sleeping tablets.
But the autopsy couldn't find anything else, George. There was no poison, no sign of violence.
No, but he was murdered all the same, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yes, I think he was. So what are we looking for?
Yeah, if you had a grudge against Langley Tarrant, if one of his exposés had ruined your life and you wanted revenge, how would you do it?
Well, I can think of plenty of people who might have wanted to bump him off. Look, even if we're right, how are we ever going to prove it?
This is what happened. Langley gets home alone, pours himself a scotch. The doorbell rings. It's somebody saying they've got a story for him. That would make him open the door.
So he lets them in? Only once they're inside.
You've ruined my life and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Now, our boy is armed. He must be armed because there's no sign of a struggle. Langley writes his letter with a gun pointing at his head. Then the killer calmly sits and watches Langley drink the whiskey, waits till he collapses and walks out of the door.
And leaves no evidence at all.
And you're absolutely right, Frank. We can't prove any of it.
I don't want to be disturbed. I shall be with the Prime Minister some time.
Yes, Doctor.
Make an appointment with Lady Tara tomorrow afternoon. Cancel Chris Evans.
Cancel, Doctor?
The condition is irreversible.
Very well, Doctor.
Well, put your feet up, Kenny. What's the problem?
Well, I don't know exactly how to put this.
Come on, I've treated three Prime Ministers before you, you know. And everything within these four walls, etc.
Has any of them ever complained about being bored witless?
Go on.
Well, I've known, it may sound mad, but I've known since I was about eight that one day I would be Prime Minister. Everything in my life was a preparation.
Mm.
And now I am Prime Minister.
Yes. You know, Harold Macmillan, one of your predecessors, said, you climb all the way to the top, the very top, and when you get there, what you find is a great big nothing.
You give me an audience. Any audience, anywhere. And I know what to do. I know almost without thinking what to do, and I'm good at it. Very good at it.
Oh, the best, so they tell me. Whereas in Downing Street, there isn't an audience.
You see, you can't say to people out loud that being Prime Minister, well, it can be boring.
Mm. And lonely.
Yes. And it gets lonelier all the time.
You're surrounded by people who want the job. What makes it worse is that you're not totally convinced that you want it.
So what do I do?
Get someone close to you. Someone you trust. Someone whose advice you can rely on, absolutely. Someone who isn't a threat. Of course, they may not be such a person.
Oh, yes.
Yes, there is such a person.
You don't even actually have to like the person.
No. No.
Come.
Sorry to disturb you, Sir Julius. Mr. Keegan on the phone. He needs something stronger than Prozac.
There wasn't a cigarette end. Heaven knows there wasn't a fingerprint.
You know what really got me curious about this?
That cab driver saying what a good mood he was in.
Well, that, yes.
And suicide being so out of character.
I'll tell you what Langley really did that was out of character. He wrote that letter in longhand. When you're a reporter nowadays, you spend half your life on the word processor. You just forget how to write a letter longhand.
It's pretty flimsy, George.
I promise you, it's true. If you're to write something, you automatically bung it on the computer. I did something recently. I'll tell you what it was. I thought I should write a few words of condolence to Langley's editor. And I sat down and I thought, I've literally forgotten how to write a letter with a pen. Langley did it because somebody was making him.
All right, so where does this get us, George?
Has anybody touched this computer since Langley died?
Well, the forensic boys must have had a look at it.
I wonder.
What are we expecting? It wasn't me, signed the killer.
What the hell's this?
As years go in and years go out, I trotted towards the tomb, still caring less and less about who goes to bed with whom.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of poetry, isn't it? So what?
If there was one thing on this earth that Langley Tarrant did care about, it was who goes to bed with whom. Langley would never have typed that. I don't think he was the poetical sort, anyway.
So now you're going to tell me this is a message? A message we were meant to find?
I suppose I'm going to have to prove it to you. I expect I can manage that, Frank.
He did give instructions that he was not to be disturbed, madam.
Did he indeed?
But I expect he'll see you.
Yes, I expect he will. What is this nonsense about you being depressed?
Marcia.
We'll sort out a job title for me later, shall we?
Yes. It's good to see you.
Never mind that. What's all this moping about? Asking yourself, what's the point? The point of being Prime Minister, Kenny, is to enjoy it. Now, who's been getting a bit above himself recently? The Home Secretary? He'll do for a start.
George, it's no good you telling me. It's a murder story, except there's nothing to broadcast.
We can broadcast something. Police are reopening the case.
Are they?
Well, no, not yet. But they will do.
Where were you actually meant to be this afternoon?
Huh? Oh, hell.
The Home Secretary waited half an hour at the BBC's Westminster studio because he was expecting to be interviewed by our crime correspondent.
I forgot all about him.
That's rather the conclusion he came to. He's complained to the chairman. George, I know you've only been a journalist about 30 years, and you may not have come across an exciting new device called a telephone. Scientists hope that it may enable us to communicate with people.
Yeah, all right, all right. I made a bit of a letter-up.
The chairman wishes to speak to you personally. In the meantime, would you please ring the Home Secretary and see if you can rearrange?
But I've got a murder story to do now.
Ring the Home Office and then go and see the chairman.
All right. And then again, possibly not. Here, Maria, you couldn't do us a favour, could you?
Yeah, what?
Send a bunch of flowers to the Home Secretary.
Yep.
To Maximum Bob with heartfelt apologies. Love and kisses, George.
Yep, yep.
And when you've done that, find out who wrote this.
Maria.
Yeah.
Coffee.
What we do not want is government by leaks to the press, innuendos, allegations of impropriety, vague suggestions of incompetence.
Certainly not, Russell. Marcia, is that press release about the Home Secretary ready?
It's just being run off now.
What press release is this?
Well, it's simply an expression of my fullest confidence in one of our colleagues.
You mean the way the chairman of a football club expresses confidence in the manager?
What a very striking parallel. You should use it in a speech.
Mm. You know, for some reason, I feel better than I've felt in weeks.
I'm delighted to hear it. And Marcia, I'm naturally pleased to see you back in government.
Naturally. You know, I've often wondered about the day I had to resign, when I woke up to find myself all over the front pages. Marcia borrows £373,000 from the Paymaster General.
Yes, we never did clear up when the press got hold of that, did we, Russell?
Didn't we?
After all, we don't want government by leaks, innuendos and allegations. Do we, Chancellor?
This had better be right.
What is it?
Message from George. He says don't worry about a lead story for the Bulletin. He's got a murder story for us.
There's nothing on any of the agent detectives about it.
No. Still, even George wouldn't invent a murder, would he?
Richard, the chairman.
Crikey. Good morning, Lord Crichton Potter.
Don't disturb yourself, old chap. I don't suppose you've seen George Cragg at all, have you?
thought he was coming to see me. I expect it was my mistake.
No, it wasn't your mistake.
No, it's no problem. You know, when I was leader of the Liberal Democrats, a fellow wanted to talk to me about the alternative regional top-up list system in Finland. I kept him waiting 12 years. Then I resigned.
You'll be pleased to learn I've decided to send George on a time management course. I've sent a memo to the training manager, management training management. Should I get you a copy?
No. There's an awful lot of management at the BBC, isn't there?
Well, of course, George isn't strictly management.
Well, thank God somebody isn't. Anyway, may I use one of your studios?
Chairman, of course.
Time for a message to the nation. Something to cheer everybody up.
And now on Radio 4, the chairman of the BBC, Lord Crichton Potter, gives one of his regular progress reports on the state of the BBC.
Hello, my dears. You know, I was rather hoping to talk to you about cricket. But my advisers, you wouldn't believe how many of them there are, insist that as your chairman, I must join in the debate about the BBC's licence fee. Right in the middle of a test match. Now look, for pity's sake, £101. I've given a bigger tip than that to a taxi driver. Of course, I have to recognise that not all of you listening to this live in London. Some of you are hearing me in places like Plymouth and Sunderland. Well done. But you see, what you have to understand is that here in London, we can't get a prawn cocktail for £101. And when you cut through the waffle, that is really why we must all pay our licence fee. Now, I'd love to stay a little longer, but there's some excellent cricket on Sky, so I can't.
Cut that bit, Chairman.
But there hasn't been any criticism of the Home Office.
Absolutely, and let's hope it stays that way.
But you said you rejected any attempt to pin the blame on me.
And so I do, David.
But there hasn't been any blame.
Exactly, and there won't be.
Prime Minister, Kenny...
David, never be afraid to speak your mind. Simply because I'm your boss, simply because I have the power to send you to research cheesy abscesses at the Department of Agriculture, I don't want you to feel inhibited in any way.
No. No. Quite, Prime Minister. Marcia's back, isn't she?
Keep up the good work.
Feeling better?
Marcia. Even when the darkest clouds are in the sky.
One of the secrets of a happy life in politics. Never forget the importance of gratuitous malice.
Marcia, any chance of a quick interview for the Telegraph?
And never forget the importance of journalists.
The headlines again. The former Cabinet Minister Marcia Mallon is to rejoin the government as a special adviser to the Prime Minister. Downing Street has defended the Home Secretary over allegations of a crisis in the police force. The police are reopening investigations into the death of the journalist Langley Tarrant. And the England football coach Kevin Keegan has denied being addicted to antidepressants. BBC Radio 4 News.
Thanks, everybody. See if we can get an interview with Marcia for the 6 o'clock. George!
Yeah, well, hold on a minute.
Still caring less and less about who goes to bed with whom?
Yeah.
It was Dorothy L. Sayers.
What?
It was her, definitely. A bit different from our usual stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, the usual stuff being murder stories.
Time management course?
Langley Tarrant was murdered, Richard.
Time management, come on.
A murderer who leaves messages is a murderer who isn't going to stop at once.
George, you are going on this course whether you like it or not.
Who's going to be next?
If you're not out of here in 3 seconds flat, I can give you the answer to that one.
Right. Good morning, everyone. My name's Simon.
Oh, good.
And I'm the training manager, management training management. And what do I need?
4 nights holiday every time you say your job title.
I need you, I need your energy, your enthusiasm and your commitment. Right, come on, let's all stand up. Up you get. That's good. Right, now shake your arms about.
Do what?
Come on.
I haven't had this much fun since the day I was shot out of a cannon.
Right, feel that lovely energy. Lift that energy.
I am dreaming this, aren't I?
And let's all... Oh, sit down. Right, here we go. Time management.
We can spell time, actually.
Ah, you can spell time, but do you think time? What does it say to you? Come on, where's that energy? What does time say to you?
Oh, time to go, time.
Time to leave the BBC, time.
Time, gentlemen, please.
Yeah, all right. It says pubs. P-U-B-S. Good. Lateral thinking. I'm getting excited now. Management. When you hear management, what do you think?
Oh, memos, bureaucrats,
traps,
plonkers.
Yeah, good. Right. You see, energy. Right. Let's break for coffee.
But all you've done is write pubs, prats, plonkers and pillocks on a flip chart. People give you money for this. Right. I'm off.
Right, Mr. Craig, you'll miss the most important part of the course, Mr. Craig.
Oh, come on, I need your energy.
George!
Look. I'm not wasting my time on that. I've got work to do.
That's what I was coming to tell you. Your mate Jefferson wants you at Scotland Yard. You'd better get over there.
Have a look at this. Oh, my God. And there was something in it for you, George. Addressed to you personally.
Addressed to me? Today, we have naming of parts.
Yeah. Well, you don't look too pleased, my old mate. It's not what you're normally like on these occasions. A story, Frank. A serial killer, Frank. We're in business.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a bit different this time. This time somebody's murdering journalists. Well, cheer up, George. You've got a story. Somebody's murdering journalists.
In the End was written by Mark Taverner and starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Jonathan Coy, Anton Rogers, Rebecca Front, Simon Greenall and Jessica Oyelowo. And also featured Peter Woodthorpe, Hugh Parker, Neil McCall, Chris Pavlo, Beth Chalmers and Harriet Cass. The music was composed by Paul Mottram. The executive producer was Paul Schlesinger. In the End was produced by Dawn Ellis.